As London welcomes its new mayor, Sadiq Khan, the first Muslim mayor of a major European city, an uncomfortable threshold has been crossed. Because the relentless multiculturalism of Europe has finally borne its potentially deadly spore. That of a European caliphate in the world heartland of natural rights, which cannot possibly be sympathetic to constitutionalism when their constituency relentlessly demands Sharia Muslim law. Europe is capitulating to the mindless demands of the PC and multicultural crowd who demand the oppressive traditional Christian God must stand down, while the downtrodden, being Allah's people, must be allowed free rein. Now, with a Muslim mayor leading the way, we see the astonishing inroads Islam has made in the UK. What is behind the large leap of Muslim population in Britain as the Christian religion falls? The unfortunate combination of several things. First, Europe allowed former colonists to relocate to the European states, many of them in the Middle East. Second, these Muslims began reproducing quickly, or should I say continued reproducing quickly. Third, that Europeans, being highly influenced by modernity, have walked away from marriage, are not reproducing in any meaningful way, and also have become skeptics when it comes to religion generally. The net effect is that Islam is skyrocketing in number of adherents in Europe, but also as an explanatory force for how society should be assembled. Muslim theories are gaining strength. The alternate is that Christianity as a governing theory is collapsing, not from a lack of efficacy, but from absence of enthusiasm. So as the number of Muslims spike and as Christianity falls by the wayside, there's going to be a natural transition between the two. Within the next 50 years, Britain could be radically restructured by Sharia law and no longer America's partner in any meaningful sense. With 63 million people, the UK now has 3 million Muslims. But as seen in many other European capitals, many areas of London are over 50% Islamic. Further, as the national population slides into unbelief, with atheists at 48% in Britain and Christians a mere 46%, Islam is set to swell in importance, representing right now about 5%. Consider 25% of Muslims in the UK are under 10, and 10% of babies now born are Muslim, which is a very high birth rate. Overall, London has 15% Muslims, which could double in the next few years. Overall, the Muslim population of England could hit 26 million by 2050, about 15 years, according to some experts. This study is repeated across Europe, with France at 7.5% and Germany at 5.8%, both with about 4.7 million Muslims. And as everybody knows, Germany has brought in or is working on bringing in a million Muslims this year. So now what will Europe do when the leaders blindly following the politically correct religion have wildly failed their populations? It's too late to teach the adults about rights, natural law, and constitutionalism when they refuse to accept the underlying premises. And is there any will to teach the kids, or do they just sit back and watch Sharia deform and convert the continent? So the obvious application is for America, which does not have nearly the same number at merely 1%. What are our plans? Perhaps it is the West's fate to simply roll over as Islam takes and then on to the world. Good morning, 610 Kelly O'Connell. Well, I just couldn't help but notice that London had a new mayor, or is supposed to have a new mayor. I believe he's been elected already. And for the first time in a European city, major European city, it's a Muslim mayor. So that immediately got me to thinking about what kind of changes would occur in Europe if you began to get 20, 30, 40%. I mean, the game's over, I think, at 50% Muslim in any country, because then they're going to demand, and I guess we'll have a right to have their own law there, the Sharia law. But the Sharia law would take you back 1,000 years. It does not accept constitutionalism. It does not accept the Constitution's Bill of Rights. It does not accept women's rights. Their theory of warfare and conversion is different. And, you know, Islam is responsible for the vast majority of bloodshed around the world right now. And Europe, it just seems like it's lost in, you know, it's a deer in the headlights. It's a just an animal on the side of the road waiting to get run over. And that's what I'm worried about America. Europe has accepted this set of ideas no matter what the outcome is, like as we've seen with the latest immigrant numbers and the amount of terrorism in the UK. They've accepted these ideas, and they don't even really seem to get, they're willing to deal with terrorism because they want to be fair. So you've got this worship radical fairness without any evaluation of whether one religion is a better religion for building a modern society than another. And so you've got these letter, you know, and that's the problem with liberalism. It has been the problem with liberalism since its very inception in the 1850s, or should I say in the early 1800s. You know, you've got this set of beliefs that are more philosophical than they are common sense. And when they're applied, there's no wiggle room, or the wiggle room that they put in is just seems to make things worse. And so, you know, you've got these leaders, and, you know, I would put Obama in the same group of people, Barack Obama, Angela Merkel, the leadership that they've had in France and in Britain across the continent. They have. And what happened, what tends to happen is these people are upper class. They come from the upper institutions, like in America, the Ivy League, and they are taught within that society that they are the leaders and that they are the visionaries and that their ideas are true and other ideas in opposition are false. And so that gives them the motivation and the moral argument to bring their ideas in, and their ideas just happen to be liberalism, Marxism, socialism, progressivism, whatever you want to call it. And when these ideas are applied in the unthinking way that they're always applied, then the end result is disaster. It's destruction of society. And one of the most disturbing things to me about that type of liberalism is they don't seem to care. You know, there's this just kind of blind rush towards modernizing things, and it doesn't matter, because don't forget, liberalism or Marxism is based on revolution. So anyway, it seems to me that it is inevitable that we're going to have a revolution in Europe, and it's going to be a Muslim revolution. So just my take on it, but I think there's a lot of other people out there are thinking the same thing and are deeply worried about and very pessimistic about the future of Europe, because it seems like Europe, and I'm wondering if this is also true of America, if we've started to cannibalize ourselves, if we've started to turn back on what our initial theories and ideas were and begun to really attack ourselves. It's like we have cancer. It's like we have a cancer. The cancer has taken over the body politic. And the tumor, one of the tumors is Islam, but there's a lot of other tumors out there. Looking at it from that sense, this destruction of the family and this cult of sex, which is just hasn't made an extraordinary impact in the West and has taken away the enjoyment and pleasure of being a human being from tens or hundreds of millions of people. That's just another one, this relentless entitlement mentality that is not just here, but it's over in Europe, the kind of people that demand what is theirs and the kind of people that never say please or thank you, because we've trained them to believe that everything is owed to them. That, once again, is ruining their lives. You cannot be happy and have that mentality. And we see it all the time around in this county. You run into people all the time that are entitled. And this theory of religion that's been developed in Europe and is here now, is a theory that's going to destroy religious freedom, because when there's weakness, Islam rushes in to fill the vacuum and then will assert itself. So, you know, that's just my take on it. Anyway, Kelly O'Connell, it's 6:16, and got some headlines for you. I've actually got a giant show today that I'm sure I won't be able to get to, but it's 69 degrees, very nice outside. We'll take a break and come back, and I'll give you some headlines. And today is the 6th of May. Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450, KOBE, 523-1450 to call in. I might have my text machine out in the car. Here's a little Grover Washington today. This is, according to some people, the best smooth jazz album in history, Wine Light by Grover Washington. All right, so a few of your headlines for you. Mount St. Helens, we've been talking about in the recent past. We've been talking about Mount St. Helens, volcanoes in general, and how we've got these volcanoes in the West, including even in this area, we have volcanic history that is basically, still active in some sense. I mean, some of the most recent lava flows in the United States are in the state. So and that the Ring of Fire is active, and the Ring of Fire is the circle that you can trace around the Pacific islands and continents. So from all the way down in South America, all the way up to North America, over to Alaska, across over in Russia, and then across Japan into East Asia, Indonesia, and all these places, Hawaii, all these places out there are on this ring, and they're permanently active. So we've got a number of earthquakes, according to the U.S. Geological Survey, that have been occurring, and they've been testing these things and finding out that they're the kind of earthquakes that come from either the kind of the movement of these plates or the movement of the plates in conjunction with magma moving. And so they say that these magma chambers are filling up underneath Mount St. Helens. And I'll try to find a clip of that. We're talking about the last couple of weeks, the last couple of months that this has been going on. So Mount St. Helens has a massive magma chamber underneath it, which is responsible for the eruption around 1980. Mount Rainier, also in Washington, two Washington volcanoes. And then you've got the Yellowstone caldera, which is extraordinarily massive. And they say if that went off, you wouldn't believe it. It would just cover major portions of the United States with ash. So anyway, that's going on. Some other stories for you. Puma has been put under oath. New emails have surfaced, and they say that Hillary is going to be supposedly interviewed by the FBI in the coming weeks. So a man is seeking a restraining order against God, which I thought was a pretty good story. Of course, there's a kind of a classic story in the when you're studying law that comes up sometimes about a guy that tried to sue Satan for doing evil things. A real case, a guy went to court. I think he might have gone to federal court. Anyway, that would be the proper venue, by the way, in my opinion, since Satan is multi-state and even transnational. Man seeking restraining order against God. A Haifa resident, which is in Israel, asked court to keep the Almighty away, claiming he is being mean to him. And this is from the Times in Israel. So this gentleman, just a second here, we've got some activity, some self-generating activity in the computer. Okay, so this guy is put in a petition in the Haifa Magistrate Court. Okay, for this, hold on a second. I'm amazed, speaking of God and Satan, at the number of times that Satan has taken over my computer. It's really breathtaking. Well, anyway, this page is locked up a little bit, so all right, so it's back. The guys put in a case in the magistrate court. All right, I'm just going to come back to it. As soon as I give up on a page, by the way, it suddenly kind of comes back to life. An Israeli man has petitioned the Haifa Magistrate Court for a restraining order against God, claiming the Almighty has been particularly unkind to him. The initiator of the request, a resident of the northern port city, represented himself in court, and protocol of the hearing noted that God did not turn up for the session, although it did not specify how the court determined the omnipresent was not in fact there, as opposed to exercising the right to remain silent. And the petitioner, who's not named in the report, noted he has tried to obtain the restraining order from police for the past 3 years, but police were merely sent a patrol car to his home on 10 occasions. And over a three-year period, God had exhibited a seriously negative attitude towards this man. Details of what exactly the meanness looked like were not listed in this report. Presiding Judge Asan Kanan denied the request, but what do you expect from a Canaanite? And in which he said it was a ludicrous lawsuit in asserting the applicant needed help not from the court, but from rather other sources. And the report did not include a response on the outcome from any of the multitude of available spokespeople on behalf of the Lord. But from what I understand, both Ted Cruz and Glenn Beck would be available to stand in. And Obama's staff is bragging that they control the media, which is absolutely 100% correct. And cops are hunting for a man who stole from men who are stealing $500 books from Christian bookstores, Bibles. Tom Brady, $200 recipe book he's selling. It's sold out. Not too bad, huh? And Paul Ryan refusing to endorse Donald Trump. Catastrophic wildfires forcing thousands to flee in Canada. And all right, so let's take another break here and come back. And I'll see if I can get a clip of that that thing. I've got some weird Wednesday that we never got to, so we'll get on to that. But I do have some. Mount St. Helens clips. I just have to make sure that they're locked and loaded, ready to go. Kelly O'Connor, 628 on the button, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523 1450, and 805-6180. And I also have some a new list of possible VPs for Trump. It's 6:32, and it's about 70 degrees outside. It's very, very lovely outside. I'm looking out the window, and I don't see any clouds. All right, so I'm going to get to Hillary email stuff for you in just a minute because I know you love that. Actually, you probably hate to hear the name Hillary like I do. I shudder, absolutely shudder. But here, okay, here's a little bit on your Mount St. Helens. All right, so you've got these volcanoes that are, and we talked about this a few weeks ago, or maybe it was last week, whenever, that we had these volcanoes, and they have underneath them magma chambers, which is where the volcano came from in the first place. And the magma chambers are down there just, I guess, waiting to go off. And so you've got a big one underneath Mount St. Helens. You got a big one underneath Rainier, Mount Rainier, which is a beautiful mountain up in Washington. You've got a big one underneath the caldera up in Yellowstone. But, you know, you've got one actually, I believe, up north here in the volcano outside of Albuquerque. So in these pools of magma just down there bubbling away, you know. All right. So according to Wired.com, there is this magma is refilling itself underneath Mount St. Helens. And Mount St. Helens was another one. I think it was one of the three sisters up there. And, you know, you could see it if you're up traveling around up in the Pacific Northwest, and these mountains dominate, absolutely dominate the skyline. It's almost like seeing a picture of Mount Fuji in Japan. Okay, the United States Geological Survey in the Pacific, or Service in the Pacific Northwest Seismic Network, has an array of seismometers on many of the Cascade volcanoes to watch these earthquakes and monitor the earthquakes that are coming out of the volcanic areas to understand which volcanoes are waking up. And in addition to that, they also have pictures from above, from satellites and such, of how these mountains might be growing and morphing around. Since the start of 2016, an earthquake swarm has been detected underneath the currently quiet Washington volcano. I'm reading this out of Wired. These earthquakes have been occurring from depths of 2 kilometers down to 7 kilometers beneath the volcano. And these swarms are being interpreted as the slow recharging for the volcano of a new magma chamber underneath. As the magma intrudes, it puts pressure on the rocks around it and heats up the water and gases around there. So there have been other recharge events, and they don't necessarily lead to an eruption, but there is activity down there. Now, I've got a little clip from a documentary, Seconds from Disaster, Mount St. Helens Eruption. Check this one out.
The slumbering volcanic peak of Mount St. Helens. In its shadow, one of America's most beautiful national forests. A magnet for vacationers seeking the great outdoors. But then, without warning, the volcano erupts. In just 4 minutes, the blast flattens 220 square miles. Huge mud flows surge down 150 miles of river valleys. 57 people die. With all eyes on the mountain, why did no one predict such a catastrophic eruption? Now, using advanced computer simulation, we reveal why the Mount St. Helens blast took everyone by surprise. Disasters don't just happen. They're triggered by a chain of critical events. Unravel the clues and count down those final seconds from disaster. The American Northwest. Washington State. Mount St. Helens. At nearly 10,000 feet, the spectacular volcanic peak crowns the Pacific coast. Beneath Mount St. Helens, just 100 miles from Seattle, lie almost 2,000 square miles of national forest and a network of 3 rivers fed by meltwater from the volcano's snow-capped peak. is a picture postcard setting, a vacationer's paradise. The region pulls in 500,000 visitors a year. Then, on March 27th, 1980, at 12:36 p.m.
We are going to be over Mount St. Helens right now, and there is no question at all that the volcanic activity has begun.
Mount St. Helens spews smoke and ash higher than a mile into the sky. The volcano has woken up from a 123-year sleep. Excited by the prospect of more eruptions on their doorstep, thousands of spectators flock to the area. But scientist David Johnston from the U.S. Geological Survey, or USGS, is worried. He's been fascinated by volcanoes since the age of 18 and thinks that this eruption is an indication of something larger to come. He goes on TV to warn the public of the danger.
Could be within hours, it could be within days, or even a few couple of months. This is not a good spot to be standing.
Johnston is only 30, but he's already a highly respected volcanologist. Local county sheriffs heed his warning. They immediately close public roads and highways within about 7 miles of the summit, and they force local residents and sightseers to evacuate. March 29th, 2 days later, the volcano is quiet. But a news camera crew spots a newly formed crater on the mountain's summit. When USGS scientists see the images, they know that internally, the mountain is waking up. They devise a map to highlight areas that will be affected in the event of a large eruption. They base it on the worst eruption the volcano has ever produced, a classic vertical blast. The map includes areas that will be directly affected by the blast, as well as 150 miles of river valleys that will be affected by lahars, giant mud flows caused by rapid snowmelt at the volcano's peak.
All right, so that'll just give you a little taste. That give you a little bit of a taste of this eruption that came up. But the thing that happened before that eruption is happening now again, although it has happened since the eruption, at various times with magma moving around down there, doesn't mean that there's an imminent eruption. But consider this, the same thing could happen up in Albuquerque, or it could happen over in those Carrizozo lava fields. Could happen in this area, to be totally honest. We're in the middle of a bowl of volcanoes, and there's a caldera right down in the south. And geologically speaking, this area, the state, as a matter of fact, is fairly young with its volcanoes. 640 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces 1450 KOBE, and 523 1450 to call in. We'll be right back at 640. All right. Well, here's a little bit more from this documentary on the explosion at Mount St. Helens. Remember, this is around 1980, and really not that long ago, but check it out. And I'm putting this on today because there is news that there's magma that is filling up the chamber below Mount St. Helens. And we realize, as I had reported earlier, on previous shows, that the Ring of Fire is leaping to life. It's coming. It's there's more movement. There's more earthquakes, and we see more volcanic activity. And this could be the precursor to another very big eruption.
May 17th, 1980. For 7 weeks, the U.S. has been watching Mount St. Helens sputter. The big one has yet to happen, but the waiting game makes national news.
There are rumblings of something big about to happen in Washington State, the eruption of Mount St. Helens.
Then, as quickly as it started 7 weeks earlier, Mount St. Helens falls silent. To some, it feels like the big one won't happen after all. With a hot and sunny forecast, hundreds of people from towns and cities make spur-of-the-moment decisions to head out to the countryside. Among them are two mill workers, 19-year-old Danny Balch and his 20-year-old friend Brian Thomas. Danny is
All right. So anyway, let me get back to that. Maybe in the next hour, play a little bit more of a clip of the actual eruption. But there was plenty of warning, although they say the USGS didn't have the ability to shut down that area. It's an advisory board put together by the government. So there were a number of people that were killed by that eruption. And like I say, it's things are starting to wake up, and we've seen earthquakes and volcanic activity all around the Ring of Fire. And America has been strangely silent, the North Pacific, or pardon me, the North American continent. All right, let's move on to another story here with a little bit on the Hillary Clinton situation. They've got her number one right-hand woman, Huma Abedin, who's married to Anthony Weiner, a lady that many people have claimed, I don't know with any real evidence, that she was the girlfriend of Hillary Clinton. But interestingly enough, Huma Abedin is also a daughter of one of the most important leaders of the Muslim Brotherhood for Women. So, and what we had discussed this on the show before, disturbing information in a time when we're basically fighting Islam on all fronts. We've got this lady that's highly connected. This is why there's this surreal quality to the government right now in America, the kind of things that they're doing. And I don't know, there doesn't seem to be any end to the crazy decision making, you know. But Hillary has been speaking of waiting for eruptions, Hillary's been on indictment watch, not just, well, I won't make a rude comment, but on an indictment watch, and it's just, I mean, I at some point, one of the Clintons has got to kind of like, kind of suffer the ultimate indignity, although, you know, Bill Clinton was impeached, of course, but He never really had to suffer through that. But here is on some evidence with the Clinton. And this is this guy, Unger, however you pronounce his name, that used to be on MSNBC, Cenk Uygur, on what's coming for Hillary.
Told by the pundits in Washington that an indictment, Cenk, of Hillary Clinton, that's not going to be relevant. It's either not going to happen, or if it does, it's no big deal to get indicted in the middle of a presidential run. Really? Okay, now, what they never tell you, by the way, is the guy running the FBI is James Comey. He's a longtime Republican. He worked under George Bush. Now, he deserves a lot of credit because he defied an order under Bush, which was of great principle, and it was on a constitutional issue. And I give credit back then. But remember that when he did that, he was the number two person under John Ashcroft at the Justice Department of George W. Bush. He was number two to Ashcroft. The dude's a serious Republican. And of course, in a genius move, Barack Obama was like, oh, I know, I'll bring the Republicans and Democrats together. I'll take that Republican and put him as the head of the FBI. And then while the Democrats are running a really important election, he'll get to decide when he indicts our candidate. Oops. Now, I don't know how political James Comey is. Obviously, he did a great job of not being political under the Bush administration. He stood up to them. So I'm not giving him credit 18 different times for that at the time and just today, right? But he does hold all the cards in his hand. So now I'm going to go to a couple of Republicans here to give you a sense of how the investigation is going. And then I want to tell you at the end what could happen in this investigation.
Right. Let's take a little break on this, and we'll be back in here a little bit more. The investigation is heating up. It's getting, it's kind of coming to a peak, and to use some volcanic metaphors, but I don't think that necessarily it has reached peak level, but James Comey doesn't have all the cards. That would be the lady that's running the Justice Department. She's the one who decides on the indictment. 649 Kelly O'Connell AM Las Cruces 1450 KOBE 523 1450. And we'll be right back.
Thank you.
It is 6:52, and here's a little bit more on the question. While they're interviewing Huma Abedin about these emails, and more emails have surfaced in just the last couple of days, what may be happening within the inside of this investigation that, if it went far enough, if she was indicted, has the potential to overturn not just the Democratic Party's nomination process, but the election itself?
First, we go to Judge Napolitano on Fox News. I know that he can be clownish at times or a lot of times, but understand that, unfortunately, in this insane world we live in, this guy is super relevant. You know why? One of the reasons why is because when Trump was asked who he'd put on the Supreme Court, he mentioned Napolitano, a guy who plays a judge on TV for Fox News. Now, I know he was a real judge at one point, too. That's so embarrassing. He picked a TV pundit like this. Anyway, so here's Napolitano on this FBI investigation.
Just for the record, this guy, Unger is an idiot. He's got a law degree, but he is like the most leftist person, but he's the one who had some information to give to you. So hold on.
You have been on record as saying that she broke the law. You, the judge, have convicted her on television. Are you ashamed?
No, not at all. The evidence of her guilt is overwhelming. The question. Overwhelming to anybody who observed what she did and
then it has to be overwhelming to the Bureau then, right?
Absolutely. And
the Bureau
knows a lot more about it than I do.
If the Democrats that run the Justice Department decide that she's not going to be indicted because she's about to become or will have become the Democratic nominee for president, can you imagine what the reaction will be? The FBI will release the evidence against her, much of which is already publicly known.
Okay, so don't get thrown by O'Reilly pretending to be against him. Like, oh, aren't you embarrassed that it hasn't happened yet? It's actually a soft one.
All right, so I can only take so much of this guy at a time, but here's the upshot, and I've already played a few of these clips before. The fact of the matter is that Hillary Clinton is involved in a situation that is extremely perilous for a couple of reasons. Number one, it has a lot of legal peril in it, in that she, in theory, could get indicted, there's two things that are going on right now. Number one is that the possibility for a legal indictment, which is out there. I mean, it is a possibility. Even for the most cynical listeners out there, she could get indicted. But here's another thing, playing against this and work this out in your mind a little bit. You've got this woman who's claiming to be, you know, she got up on TV and she's never knowingly lied to anybody. And she's made statements like that. And so she's also said that, she's running for office. I mean, she can't really be seen as a person who's resisting cooperation at the same time she's running for office. So she's at least taking part in these FBI investigations. Now, will she tell the FBI that she's affirming her Fifth Amendment rights? I assume that she would do that at some point, because she is as guilty as a fox in a hen house of having classified information in her email system. We've already pointed out that Guccifer, this international hack artist, has said it was like it was child's play. You know, it was like, breaking in through the pet door for a burglary. So you've got this going on. And if it comes out, if the FBI leaks it, or if it just becomes public knowledge that she's resisting the investigation, the Democrats are really not going to care. It's the rest of the country that's going to be outraged. But there may be Democrats that say to themselves, we don't want any more of this. We don't want any more of this Clinton, this circus that the Clintons always bring. And we're going to go after the superdelegates, and we're going to tell those superdelegates that you can vote for anybody that you want, meaning that you can vote for Bernie Sanders if you like, or they can bring in Biden if they want, whatever. Now, Cenk Unger, or however you pronounce his name, he's Turkish, has said that the amazing thing, there's like 180 FBI agents investigating this thing. But the purpose behind the superdelegates is to make sure that the party gets the candidate that they want. If Hillary lost all of her superdelegates with as tight as the race has been, then she would be in a lot of trouble, and somebody else could come in and take up those superdelegates. So the upshot is that right now, Hillary Clinton could be indicted, or she could at least, the FBI could just say, we want to indict her, or we recommend that she be indicted, because that's all the FBI can do. They're not prosecutorial. They are investigative, and they're a police body. They're America's national police force. But they can't, they don't prosecute. That would be the Justice Department. So now Hillary has to play this game where she's got to appear to be cooperating in the emails, and at the same time not releasing too much information that would be harmful. And so this is kind of a classic situation where the attorney would tell the client, don't talk to them, and let them bring the questions to us, or let them bring the questions to me as the attorney, and I'll kind of, you know, if the worst case scenario is, you and I'll go back and go over some of the questions, and then, you know, answer the person, the investigator, the FBI. So anyway, she is in a very, very tight situation, but I assume, all things being equal, with a Democratic president who's in his own way extraordinarily corrupt, in that he completely turns his back on the rule of law and does whatever he wants in most cases, that she is going to slide in this case. 659 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450, and we'll be back after a break on the hour. And we're going to have Weird Friday and an open mic as well. So anything you want to talk about. Thank you. right, so Kelly, 706. It's about 70 degrees out there. Open mic, open topic Friday. Do you want to get into anything? Now, I do have some, I mean, I've got the stuff from Weird Wednesday that we never did because we had a visitor. And there's a couple of things that, well, anyway, here's something from Bill O'Reilly on the debate that is going to be occurring between Trump and Hillary Clinton. You have to admit this is going to be a spectacular period of time to go through these debates.
Hi, I'm Bill O'Reilly. Thanks for watching us tonight. Handicapping the Clinton-Trump race, that is the subject of this evening's Talking Points memo. As you may know, we here at The Factor like to advance stories, not give you the same old stuff over and over again. As we predicted weeks ago, Hillary Clinton will be running against Donald Trump for the presidency unless she's indicted over the email scam. So let's take a look at who has the advantage right now. An analysis of the Electoral College by the Washington Post says that if Mrs. Clinton wins all the states Democrats traditionally win, plus D.C., she only needs to win Florida to become president. But that is a bit simplistic because Donald Trump should be more competitive in states like Michigan and Pennsylvania than Mitt Romney was. However, there is no question, Mrs. Clinton is a favorite to win at the moment. Even talk radio Republicans are split on Trump.
My instinctive feeling right now is that Trump is going to win, beat Hillary badly, that it could be landslide proportions. I still don't think people understand why Trump won this. I don't think they understand at all the reason people support Trump.
Because Donald Trump is the GOP candidate, and I believe Hillary Clinton is going to win because of this, you will never elect another GOP person to high office ever.
The national prophet is speaking. Please listen.
Is you are now going to have Hillary Clinton legalize as many voters as you can.
Right now, you can throw out the primary votes out of the window. About 20% of voting age Americans participated in the primaries, leaving the vast number of Americans still to be heard. Mr. Trump's support is fervent, and that will help him. Secretary Clinton's support more tepid. However, her advantage in the minority precincts and among women is substantial. And Ms. Clinton is putting forth that she's not going to take any guff from Donald Trump.
If he wants to go back to the playbook of the 1990s, if he wants to follow in the footsteps of those who have tried to knock me down and take me out of the political arena, I'm more than happy to have him do that.
Poor Hillary.
This is, to me, a classic case of a blustering, bullying guy who has knocked out of the way all the Republicans because they were just dumbfounded.
For his part, Mr. Trump told me last night he's more than happy to take the low road if Hillary Clinton attacks it. That sets up a very unpredictable race. And remember, a debate between Clinton and Trump will be the most watched political event in history, I predict. So summing up anything?
All right. So, okay. So we've got some, anyway, I can't wait for this. I can't wait for somebody to finally stand up to Hillary and tell her how things really are. So sick of all of the preferential coverage these Democrats get in the press. You know, it's no surprise when you read on the Drudge Report that we control the press. The press is supposed to be the canary in the coal mine, right? It's supposed to be the press is supposed to react. It's supposed to put the facts out there and also give a reaction through editorial pages to some of these events that are important events. And the upshot is that they haven't reacted to so many things from Obama. So we've gotten used to just one disaster after another one, and nobody is even nobody says anything, and so it becomes normal for the country to be treated like a redheaded stepchild. So anyway, all right. So I've got another couple of stories for you here. Weird Wednesday continuation, Weird Friday. Coldest winter for 50 years in the UK, and that was noted last year, but the storms that the UK got and the freezing temperatures were unprecedented. the amount of snowfall. And so you're asking, doesn't this prove global warming? And there's another story out there saying that the Al Gore movie, The Inconvenient Truth, that came out to prophesy all of these coming disasters, the seas rising by 20 feet and the, you know, the temperature going way up, all this stuff, that never occurred. And so it seems to me that it is the global warming people that need to prove their case and stop insulting those of us that are doubtful about it. The seas have not risen to overtake New York and Miami and LA or whatever other part of the world that they were supposed to take over. And the temperature just feels dandy outside to me. 712. Kelly O'Connell, let's take a little break here and come back and reload with some new weird stories. Many weird and interesting stories. Here is perhaps the penultimate achievement of the smooth jazz. I really don't listen to too much smooth jazz, but I thought maybe we'd do one week of it. But I don't know. I find myself listening to traditional jazz in my car, and I put it on and I forget about it because so much more interesting than smooth jazz, you know, is like a pop song without any words. But in this case, here's your words, just the two of us. Giant smash for Grover Washington Jr., who died way young, but it had a mean horn that he carried with him. 7:13 a.m. Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 to call in. Open topic Friday. We'll be back. All right, 7:17, and I've got a couple of science-related, or probably a couple more than that, but I got a couple of science-related stories for you right now. Indiana University researchers find Earth may be home to 1 trillion species. Largest ever analysis of microbial data reveals an ecological law, concluding 99.999% of species remain undiscovered. But don't panic. Don't freak out, because most of these species are microbial. Earth could contain, and this is from indiana.edu website, Earth could contain nearly 1 trillion species with only 1/1000th of 1% now identified, according to biologists at Indiana University. They combine microbial, plant, and animal community data sets from government, academic, and citizen science sources, resulting in the largest compilation of its kind. Altogether, these data represent over 5.6 million microscopic and non-microscopic species from 35,000 locations across the world's oceans and continents except Antarctica. And they're saying this is one of the great challenges in history to put all of these organisms together in a list. Of the catalog species, only about 10,000 have ever been grown in a lab. This is microbial species, and fewer than 100,000 have been classified in sequences. So there's a lot of animals out there, but most of them microbial. You'll never have to deal with them one-on-one, I guess. All right, so here is a very interesting story. Desert Country, UAE, United Arab Emirates, which is just a bunch of sand by the water in the Middle East. Desert Country hoping to spark rainfall rise by building fake mountain. Now think of at Disneyland, the Matterhorn, and you go through the Matterhorn and you realize that it's made out of either fiberglass or paper mache. United Arab Emirates is hoping a fake peak will force air to rise, creating clouds and encouraging rain. An American-based National Center for Atmospheric Research, NCAR, is currently working on the process. And the lead researcher, Rolof Bruinchez, said, what we're looking at is basically evaluating the effects on weather through the type of mountains, how high it should be, and how the slope should be. And so, and NCAR's Corporate for Atmospheric Research got about $500,000 from the Emirates to work out a detailed model study evaluating the effects of building a mountain on the weather. Why don't they just put all their trash in a pile and let it just build up, you know, and get higher and higher? Building a mountain is not a simple thing, Bruinchez said. We are still busy finalizing assimilation, so we're doing a spread of all kinds of heights, widths, locations, etc., to study the climatology. But wouldn't that be remarkable if they could build a fake mountain and get real rain from a fake mountain? All right. Speaking of Islam and Europe, I started off the show with a scary fact that Britain is going to possibly have 26 million Muslims in the by 2050. I think that's wildly overestimating it, but still there's going to be a point where Islam cannot be ignored in Britain, and they're going to have to start bringing in the law to satisfy these people because they want their own law. Who could blame them? And yet their law is terrible, absolutely terrible. The secret mosques opening their doors to gay Muslims in Europe. More imams and teachers from the Muslim world are coming out as gay and preaching that homosexuality is not condemned in Islam. My goodness. So we got a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Good morning, Kelly. This is Antonio.
Antonio, God bless you, brother. And what's going on?
The way you started off the show and what you're saying right now about Britain and that Muslim mayor, I think it's happening here. And yesterday was National Day of Prayer. And every year it keeps getting smaller and smaller. There's less people to National Day of Prayer. And it hurt my heart yesterday to see that there's less people. And you don't see it. There was, I think, my daughter and two little boys were the youth that was there, three. And years ago when they had it at that hotel by Crackle Barrel, it was so full that they couldn't let any more people in because of the code, the fire code.
Uh-huh.
And what's happening to our people? There's less people that love and fear God. And I think the same thing might happen here.
Well, there's kind of an interesting thing going on. Number one, the 48% of British people define themselves as atheist, which is extraordinary, especially given England's religious history. Number two, and I think that's 46% of the people indicate that they're Christian. So we've got the same thing going on. There's a relentless push from the society, from the elites that religion is a bad thing. And you get Frankie calling up and saying religion should be taken out of society. Even if the society collapses in the wake of it, we need to get rid of religion. There's this onus against it. But I've got a friend, Judah. He's been on the show many times, and he says that he is aware that there is a national movement in America where people are starting to pray in greater and greater numbers. And he was just telling me that yesterday. I was kind of taking notes.
Uh-huh. Well, I hope it happens here because it's sad. You know, 3-4 years ago when Congressman Steve Pierce came and they had it at the Allen Theater, there was only 10 people there. And it's sad to see how I know some Christians here. And I said yesterday at the morning service, and there was only 15 of us there, I think. And I said, this politically correctness religion is killing us.
It sure
is. And it's tying our hands behind our back. But, you know, in James 4:17, it says, if you know something is wrong and you're doing nothing about it, it's sin.
Yeah.
And God's people need to wake up. We can't let them take over.
Yes, works. Faith without works is dead, in other words.
Amen. But again, you know, I thank you that you're always open to listen to everybody, and you have your own style of bringing in the truth, and I really appreciate that. And
thank you,
God,
Antonio.
God bless you and all your family.
Thank you. God bless you, too, and have a great weekend.
Thank you. You, too.
Okay, bye-bye. All right, folks, 724, good call from Antonio. All right, so... wow, there's some great stories here. All right, so anyway, more imams are coming out as gay and preaching that homosexuality isn't condemned in Islam. They're part of a global push for a more liberal interpretation of the Quran that acknowledges diversity and empowers mosques to welcome sexual minorities. Now, that's from an Australian version of ABC. And... well, it's kind of interesting because what you find is in Islam, there is no activity that is more harshly condemned and punished than homosexuality. This is strange because homosexuality is actually rampant in the Middle East because of the segregation of sexes. And if you would want to include the use of T-boys and this type of thing, the rampant... this week, I mean, I have mentioned this before, but the amount of child sex abuse in Islam is astounding. And so when I had mentioned to you something about thighing, it's not sighing, it's thighing the other day, is what happens is because these are countries where there's no dating, if you can imagine that, there's no interaction of the sexes per se, unless it's family. So there's arranged marriages. Now, it is not unheard of that a man would arrange to marry a woman who's actually a baby, and then he would take custody of the baby or a child and raise the child in his house. And all right, so there is various types of sexual activity now that occur between the adult and the child in this situation. If you think that I'm making this, I just challenge you to Google thighing, like thigh with an ing on the end, and look up pedophilia or look up child adult sex in Islam. It's just a radically different worldview. And so according to Muslim tradition, a man should not have sex with a woman who has not been through puberty. But other sexual activities are done, including thighing. So anyway, now, when they do punish homosexuals, a lot of times they'll take them to a top of a building or a cliff and throw them off. And you see that ISIS blindfolds these people and then throws them off. And if they live after they hit the ground, then the people come up with the stones and smash them. But I've seen homosexuals have been disemboweled, have been hung. I've seen them beheaded, of course. But the traditional way that they're supposed to be killed in Islam is supposed to be put into a pit and then have a building or stones, boulders pushed on top of them so that they repeat what happened in Sodom and Gomorrah. So anyway, in the midst of all this, they're saying there's nothing in the Quran that condemns homosexuality, says Imam Dai. All right. So, well, let's, you know, Kind of an interesting development. Now, liberation theology. Here, this is from the American Al Jazeera. As a matter of fact, this is from Al Jazeera Online. Liberation theology, which is a combination of the New Testament and Marxism, which is rampant in South America, which is where the Pope is from. It was once rejected by the church, now embraced by this Pope. And the question is Pope Francis some kind of a communist? Is he anti-American? Why is he against capitalism? And the answer to this is that he was, at that time, Pope Francis now, who used to be Reverend Jorge Mario Bergoglio, became the leader of the Jesuits in Argentina in 1973. And he embraced in 15 years in leadership in charge of the Jesuits. And he made hundreds of errors in those years, he admits. But he did embrace, and you can tell it just by listening to him, and I pointed it out on the show many times, this Pope is a Marxist. There's no doubt about it from what he says, if it's from his heart, and I assume that it is. So he has he always cared about the poor, and supposedly he used to work to suppress liberation theology at the same soup kitchens, distributing medicine and blankets to the needy, and but demanding that the poor get charity. And all right, so he was supposedly conservative in those days, but as he developed, as time went by, he became an embracer of liberation theology, which is kind of sad, because the only way that you can get people out of poverty is not by the continual hemorrhaging and giving of wealth from the rich to the poor. You give a man a fish, he has fish for a day, or a woman, or a tranny. If you teach a tranny to fish, she will have fish every day. A rather fishy scenario. All right, let's take a break here. 7:30 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. This is now national. Give a tranny a fish day. We'll be right back.
I see the crystal raindrops fall and the beauty of it all when the sun comes shining through to make those rainbows in my mind when I think of you sometime and I want to spend some time with you, just the two of us.
News from Las Cruces and the region on KOBE, AM 1450.
18 juvenile inmates are moving back into the Doniana County Juvenile Detention Center. It reopens today, about a year after low staffing levels among jail officers caused officials to consolidate the youth and adult facilities. Jail Director Christopher Barella tells the Las Cruces Sun News that improved retention rates have allowed the Juvenile Detention Center to reopen about a year ahead of schedule. He says the jail loses an average of 4 officers on a monthly basis, but a year ago that number was around 9. County officials say pay increases and aggressive recruiting help boost the numbers. LCPD arrested a man suspected of abusing his girlfriend's son, who suffers from cerebral palsy, on Wednesday. Roberto Aguirre is charged with 1 count of intentional child abuse. Police were dispatched to a mobile home where a teenage boy was found to be severely beaten. The 14-year-old boy was transported to a local hospital. His injuries included a swollen right eye, swollen cheek and lip, and bruising to his neck consistent with strangulation. The boy's mother says she put her son to bed and left Aguirre to watch him while she went to the store. NMSU's Athletic Review Committee voted yesterday to keep New Mexico State football in the Football Bowl subdivision, or top level, after the school was booted from the Sun Belt Conference following the 2017 season. Idaho announced it would drop from the FBS to the Football Championship subdivision last week, and there was speculation that NMSU may do the same. All 26 members of the committee voted in favor of keeping the Aggies playing at the top level. NMSU has still not found a new conference home once they leave the Sun Belt. The state auditor is looking into what led to a backlog of more than 5,400 untested evidence kits from sexual assaults and rapes at law enforcement agencies and evidence vaults across the state. Tim Keller says a special survey of 8 police departments and sheriff's offices is aimed at identifying root causes of the backlog and providing better policies and written standards to prevent it from happening again. Keller's new audit will span state law enforcement agencies from Hobbs to Farmington and include the Las Cruces and Albuquerque police departments. For the Bravo Mike Radio Network, I'm Vanessa Dalbovich.
Think about it. Wouldn't it be a thrill to golf at a course that's hosted U.S. Open qualifying rounds for 3 years? You can experience championship golf year-round at Red Hawk Golf Club. Learn more at golflosscruises.com, including specials for group outings and fundraising events at Red Hawk.
This is the sound of a car. Hidden within is energy surface. Up to 75% happens during life. But Castrol GTX Magnatec has intelligent molecules that clean, providing an extra layer of protection from the start. Listen to your engine. With Castrol GTX Magnatec, instant protection from the moment you start. Sound the surface wear drop test. As tested in the industry sequence 4A wear test.
Hey, I'm the future you. Listen, we regret not going out more. All we did was play video games against that guy from Indonesia. We can fix this. TGI Fridays, dine and drink. Get a petite sirloin, cheddar mac and cheese, and a glass of wine. Or a juicy truffle stack burger, fries, and a margarita. All for just $12. By the way, the guy we beat from Indonesia, yeah, he was 11.
Pick a meal and a drink for just $12. Dine and drink, only at Friday. Valid on select items only, restrictions may apply. Offer valid at participating locations for a limited time while supplies last. Please drink responsibly.
He and Las Cruces with Kelly O'Connell. He has to drive down Valley, too.
All right, so 7:34. And we have on the show recently, especially in these days of the Glenn Beck watch and checking to see when Glenn Beck is going to check himself into a mental institute. But we've talked about Mormonism. Glenn Beck's a Mormon. This is an interesting story that doesn't have anything to do with Mormonism, or pardon me, with Glenn Beck. It's from the New Yorker magazine, The Immortality Upgrade. It came out on April 20th. It is absolutely one of the most fascinating things I've ever read. All right. So I'll just begin to have the magazine begins. On April 7th, 1844, Joseph Smith, founder of the Mormon faith, delivered a sermon to 20,000 of his followers in Nauvoo, Illinois, the famous King Follett sermon. It was the funeral of King Follett, a close friend of Smith's, and no doubt he was thinking about King. And he says during this sermon, this eulogy, God himself was once as we are now and is an exalted man and sits enthroned in yonder heavens. That is the great secret. You have got to learn how to be gods yourselves, the same as all gods have done before you, namely by going from one small degree to another and from a small capacity to a great one, from grace to grace, from exaltation to exaltation until you attain the resurrection of the dead. Now, Lorenzo Snow, a lively fifth president of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, LDS, came up with a simpler formula from what Joseph Smith taught, which is the often repeated phrase from the Mormons today that you will hear: as God now is, man may be. So there is a theory in Mormonism of evolution, of divine evolution. Wow. This article is about a movement within the Mormon Church, within the fringes of the Mormon Church, for transhumanism. Now, transhumanism is the combination or the combining of technology, including parts, mechanical parts, including operations, could be DNA operations, could be organ transplants, or bringing in mechanical devices to take the place of worn out parts, or even that the person would have his own heart or lungs or whatever, kidneys cloned and grown in a laboratory to take body parts that were worn out or diseased. Okay, so earlier this month, there was a meeting in Provo, Utah, or in Salt Lake City, Utah. It was the annual meeting of the Mormon Transhumanist Association, and advancing certain theories in cryogenics, which is the freezing of human tissue to be used later, bionics, artificial intelligence. And so to cut to the chase here, and it's MTA, by the way, Mormon Transhumanist Association. What these Mormons are doing, cutting edge Mormons, is they are developing the ability to realize Joseph Smith's dream to live forever, to be a god. to travel in space, to have your own planet, to have innumerable wives in space that you can breed spirit children with. Yes, that's all part of Mormonism. And they are trying to create an immortal human being, not through some sort of just a divine function, but they're trying to do this through human science. And it is fascinating. It is absolutely fascinating. And they say that although the church, of course, is aware of this movement in transhumanism, which comes from Julian Huxley, the British biologist who started the World Wildlife Federation, brother of Aldous Huxley, he coined the term transhumanism, the movement to update and make non-redundant human beings. And Ray Kurzweil, the guy that invented the electric keyboard, I have actually a Kurzweil piano. That guy that came on my show, James Duane, I've got it at his house. As a matter of fact, it's been there forever. But anyway, these Mormons believe that they are going to fulfill Mormon prophecy by creating an immortal group of human beings, of Mormons, and that they will live together as Joseph Smith prophesied those many years ago in over King Follett's grave, over his corpse. Isn't that fascinating? All right, let's take a break here. Kelly O'Connell, you want to live forever? Mormonism is making an offer. They're making a shot at it anyway. 7-4, Las Cruces, 1450 KOB, 523, 1450, and we'll be back to pick up some even stranger stories.
Just the two of us. We can make it if we try.
All right, 7:43, and we're moving on to the oil world. And Scientific American has put out an absolutely fascinating article. The age of cheap oil and natural gas is just beginning. All right, so they point out that the price of oil, the rise of the price of oil, and this this myth that we have reached peak oil, which was put out by another king, King Hubbard, is also a fallacy, and that oil prices have risen in the last 40 years by 900% between 1970 and 2013, whereas commodities like metals and minerals have only gone up 68%. So now they're saying that the reason price increased so much was opposed to economic, political factors, and the cartels that come in and control. All right, so here's the interesting thing from this article. They said that the era of cheap oil is here forever, basically, or here for as far as we can see in the future. And the reason for that is because of one technology with two applications. The first for fracking, the horizontal drilling, and using these special pipes to crack the strata of the rock, which allows the oil and the gas to pouring out or seeping out, whatever you want to say it. That increased U.S. production by 88%. And even though the powers that be in the Middle East tried to destroy the fracking industry in America, genie is out of the bottle. And what they talk about in this article is the amount of the ability to be efficient. And America only has 17% of frackable, you know, resources in the world. So for most of the world, oil and gas, they've not even tried fracking. They do, though. It will continue for the foreseeable future to keep the prices down. That's another thing that they said is also part of this equation, this economic equation that has liberated so much fuel and brought it down in the prices of it so much, is that fracking resources, the technologies for fracking, horizontal drilling, is being brought back into older plays, older oil plays that are supposedly played out. And what they found is they can go back into these old oil wells and old areas where it's supposedly tapped. And a lot of times in these oil fields, believe it or not, only getting out a tiny percentage of what they know is under the ground. Can't get to the rest of it. So sometimes they come in with steam or other things to liberate more of the oil and gas. But with fracking, they're going to be able to go back through all of these ancient, or all of these used up beds, these oil beds and oil fields, and get more and more out. So the day of, or the days of just having a very expensive gas and oil, they say, is just going to be a memory. So, and it was America, of course, that invented all this stuff. America, here's another great story for you, fromage people. America has a massive cheese surplus. First, it happened with coffee, but now it's happening with cheese. According to Bloomberg's Whitney McFerrin, the United States has stockpiled an enormous surplus of cheese, maybe getting ready for the last days. We don't want to be without our cheese. Global forces, rising European imports, rising American dairy production, a weakening euro, and a glut of milk in the U.S. have led to U.S. stockpiles of cheese. And the Department of Agriculture writes, cheese across the country remain full in efforts to manage the plentiful milk supply. And such phrases like milk oversupply and substantial rises are rife in the academic and trade journals. The United States has a total of 725.7 million pounds of natural American cheese. That's real cheese, folks. Not processed cheese products. And so it's a time of euphoria and celebration for cheese lovers. We'll take one last break here and we'll reload on our last stories. And 7:48 a.m. Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 to call in. And open topic if you want to squeeze in one last topic. We'll be right back.
We look for love, no time for tears. Wasted water's all that is, and it don't make no flowers grow. Good things might come to those who wait, and to those who wait too late. We gotta go for all we know. Just the two.
/7:52, and a few more stories for you. Why is the world so beautiful? Nobel physicist Frank Wilczek sees beauty as a compass for truth, discovering it in meaning. And one of the issues here is, and they've got a picture of a very beautiful field with some flowers, I guess. But one of the issues that we had talked about this before, and I think there's used to be this guy that listened to the show, and Nate, I think his name was. This is going back like 4 years. Called up and talked about God. He was an atheist and everything. And one of the issues for people that are atheists or agnostics who believe that everything came here by accident is, why is there beauty in the world now? The natural beauty and such. You can say that it's just how we happen to see it. I mean, it's just a natural accident, or that there is no beauty. It's just an illusion. But I mean, that seems to be a contradiction on the face of it. I mean, if we see one thing that's beautiful, we know that it's beautiful in our opinion, because put it next to something that's ugly and it stands out. But where did we get our appreciation of beauty and our ability to build beautiful things ourselves? And it could be music, it could be art, it could be a beautiful vehicle, that type of thing. So another story here for you. National Geographic, a man caught on film punching a seal. What kind of a maniac would do that? It was at Salt Pond Beach Park on the Hawaiian island of Kauai, however you say it. The recording went viral. A man slaps and punches a Hawaiian monk seal who may have been meditating, resting in shallow water. Investigators later identified the seal as RKO 30, a 17-year-old beach regular. He's beloved by the community, according to the Honolulu Star Advisor, and he certainly did not deserve to be slapped and punched. Monk seals are highly endangered. They're only in Hawaii. There's about 1,000 that are there. And, of course, habitat destruction, accidental bycatch, predation by sharks are some of the culprits. And I'm going to have to add in there, for the writer, global warming is undoubtedly killing him off. Officials said RK-30 survived the ugly incident without lasting injury, but the 19-year-old suspect was arrested and could be fined up to $1,000 for seal slapping. All right. Okay, so we are looking into who the vice president is going to be for Donald Trump. And we can maybe talk about that next week, but it is kind of fascinating who he would pick. I think, just thinking about it a little bit myself, I'm thinking a good one would be Mike Huckabee, because he's the kind of guy you see him, you listen to him, you love the guy. You want to hang out with him. You want to hear his theories on stuff. So I think that he'd be a good guy to have in there. Of our own, Susana Martinez is listed as like number two in a couple of different articles that I've seen. So she must be, you know, and everybody was saying that when there was this incident in this hotel over the Christmas holiday, New Year's holiday, that there was, wasn't it back then, that she had, that there were people in her room that were throwing wine bottles off the balcony, and she was trying to find out who did it. But Obviously, that is already in the past, and I think that the GOP understands that having a female Hispanic would be very, very helpful to the. At the same time, would she check? Would Susana Martinez accept being the vice president with someone who she might think is a very racist person, and she already backed Marco Rubio? So just to think about that a little bit, and the drug Imodium, which is an anti-diarrhea drug, is being abused by people. And if you take enough of it, you can get a high, like an opioid high. But the problem is if you take more of it, not only will it stop your diarrhea, it'll also stop your heart. So you might want to be careful. If you go to an Imodium party over the weekend, please be careful. All right. Well, thanks for appreciate you tuning in. I'm trying to think of any other news that we didn't cover here or might have covered over the week. And obviously the big news is that Trump is on a solo course to get the nomination. And Ted Cruz has dropped out and John Kasich have dropped out. So now we wait and see who the vice presidential candidate is. Hillary still has her hands full with Bernie Sanders. And he says it's going to be a brokered convention, and he's going to fight back against the corrupt superdelegate system. In the meantime, Hillary herself could be indicted. It's possible. I think it's unlikely, but I think it's quite possible and still. And so, but anyway, it looks to be Trump and Hillary, and I can't wait for those debates. And the question in my mind, how many could they possibly have? And it seems like Hillary is going to have to pretend to be offended and insulted by Trump and say there's not going to be, in the name of feminism across the globe, she's going to have to drop out of the debates and stand up for women everywhere by shutting off the debates. But anyway, 7:59, and we'll take you out with some Grover Washington Jr. and Bill Withers, just the two of us. Have a great weekend. We'll meet you back in 2 days. AM Las Cruces 1450 KOBE. Kelly O'Connell here wishing you, thanking you for listening in and wishing you a wonderful weekend. Ciao. Thank you.